1 week since the earthquake and tsunami hit northern Japan. Almost 10,000 people still missing, perhaps 15,000 or more. And relief organizations are trying to clear away the rubble, reach survivors, and there's yet another crisis hitting Japan. I'm not talking about the nuclear crisis. I'm talking about hunger. Take a listen to this report from the BBC's David Grammaticus.
The freezing weather is making an already awful situation for many that much worse. The key problem is lack of fuel. The damage to Sendai's port has disrupted supplies to a chunk of northern Japan, and the consequences are dire.
The fuel shortages mean little food is reaching Ishinomaki, just a couple of hours east. So the casualties coming into its hospital now are no longer tsunami victims. They're cold and desperately hungry. Almost all are elderly. The tsunami flooded Mitsuko Ito's house. She swam with her mother to a cupboard. Then, after three freezing days, she carried the 88-year-old on her back to an emergency shelter to get food, as she recorded in her diary.
First, we had just one small piece of chocolate each. Next day, one banana, then a quarter of banana, and on the fourth day, only one biscuit.
Now Mitsuko has found there's little to eat or drink in the hospital too. This is first world Japan. But even the doctors are getting just three small scoops of rice a day. And for 3 days, Dr. Abe Masaki has had no sleep at all.
People are starving and need help. But big problem is that we cannot give many help. I mean, I cannot feed them. We cannot feed them because we don't have enough.
So a new crisis is looming here. Hunger. Not just in Ishinomaki, but in dozens of already battered towns and cities where food is not being replenished.
That is a report from the BBC's David Grammatic. He's been doing some fantastic reporting out of Japan. Joining us now from Tokyo, Reuters correspondent Dan Sloan. Dan, another, not just hunger, not just cold that's complicating the relief effort there, but I understand there's also concerns among relief workers that they don't want to search for survivors too close to that Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant.
Well, certainly with the extension of the zone for people to stay put, it went from 20 to 30 kilometers or so. That has affected, obviously, inflows of supplies and also personnel to get people out. The government is considering just kind of whole-scale movement of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people out of the potential affected area. Certainly the damage that we've seen along the Northeast, this is going to take, you know, a great deal of infrastructure efforts to kind of ship them out if indeed it goes through. One of the things that I think is crucial to note about this area, which is more sparsely populated, but it has a lot of Japan's elderly, those that, you know, weren't working in the big cities and had, you know, had lived in this area for decades, and primarily are making up a number of those that were initially killed and those that are dying because of essentially that they don't have resources, heat, food, water to keep them alive.
Well, Dan Sloan of Reuters there in Tokyo, I want to give you these two headlines we have this morning, and maybe you can explain exactly what they mean there in Japan. Number one, that Japan's nuclear safety agency raised the level for this crisis at the Fukushima Daiichi plant from a 4 to a 5. And then we have the further news that Japan's government has actually asked the U.S. For its assistance, whatever assistance that the U.S. can give over this nuclear situation.
Well, I mean, the first thing, the head of the International Atomic Energy Association is in Japan. He is a Japanese national. He's come today and basically kind of criticized a number of the approaches of both the government and Tokyo Electric Power. Today, literally an hour, 2 hours ago, we had the update on the site that it has gone from a 4 to two of five. This is, you know, compared to Chernobyl, which was a seven. Obviously, everyone is talking about this accident as the worst since Chernobyl, so that doesn't seem to be that surprising. You know, and the numbers probably won't matter that much if this situation does not worsen further. That being said, today the government admitted that it's even contemplating a Chernobyl-like resolution for this. I cover it in sand and cement and try to just box in the problem. Mm. That, you know, is a worst case scenario, and it is still trying to get you know, kind of a hookup to the plants if they're functional to try to get to cool the water there.
That's Dan Sloan, Reuters correspondent, live in Tokyo. It seems, though, Rick Justice, who we've also been speaking with, that the sense of tragedy here is really centered in the most devastated tsunami zones. So tell me about the province of Iwate and towns like Riku and Takata, where the entire town seems to be actually, you know, vanished, actually gone. Patrick? Oh, we lost Rick?
Yeah, we don't have Rick. But Dan, can you explain to us the question that John is answering about some of these rural places in the outlying areas where the relief effort may be incredibly complex
right now, and what's going on for them anyway? They're in communities that the map has been redrawn in the wake of the tsunami, and you know, in some of these places, you know, it's not a question of the number of residents that survived. It is just a fraction of what the populations were. But what they were pointing to today was just the number of elderly there and how, you know, they, you know, they're going to stay regardless of what happens. But, you know, if they can get the proper relief aid, you know, running water, heat, all the things that, you know, can keep life tolerable there, you know, they intend to go on. Again, this area is, you know, primarily agrarian. Obviously, there's nuclear facilities along the coast and ports and so on, but a lot of fishermen and a lot of farmers. And their ages are pretty much reflective of Japan's graying society.
And there, Dan Sloan, just to finish up with this, the surprise among people that this could happen in Japan, that they could be hungry and cold and without resources in first world Japan.
Well, you could call it a replay of Katrina to some degree. People never thought that could happen. It is just an offshoot of a terrible, terrible tragedy.
Reuters correspondent Dan Sloan speaking to us from Tokyo. We want to answer any questions you may have about what's happening in Japan. We will answer them for you on air. We'll answer them online if we can. Send us your questions. We'll try and help you out. 877-8-MY-TAKE. Check out more at thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.